We got big things to talk about here on Take Back, and we have an agenda. As our planet faces global climate change, melting polar ice caps, and ocean acidification, we like to remain positive. There's hope. We're still alive. Here at Take Back, we try to get deep into understanding these issues and ask big questions about what does it mean to be human? And where are we going wrong on planet Earth? Each Tuesday at noon here on Take Back, we will have thinkers, poets, writers, educators, musicians, and environmentalists help us get it right and navigate this crazy journey called life. Maybe we'll get inspired to make some big changes and look at who we have been and why. Today's guest, I am so excited to announce, is Jessica Neefsy. She is an artist and designer from Big Sur, California. She's launched a new business. She's a business entrepreneur who advocates good business and maybe the kind of business we all need to think about today. Her nature-oriented clothing designs have launched under the label Anima California. She's a nature lover, diver, surfer, let's just call her a water lover, and hiker, and wants to do her part to advocate good, responsible living. Her efforts are aiming to support organizations like Mission Blue, which, if you don't know about Mission Blue, now is the time to know. Our wonderful Dr. Sylvia Earle, a world-renowned oceanographer, has been busy for the last 60 years taking a stand for our oceans and inspiring many of us, including Jessica and myself. Jessica, thank you so much for coming all the way up here from Big Sur and joining us here on Take Back.
Thank you so much, Barbara. It's genuinely a pleasure to be here.
We were just talking right before the show how you and I met, which is kind of a wild story.
It's a fun story.
It is. It was about a year ago.
Yeah.
And you approached me.
That's right. Yeah. I think we were congregating around the filmmaker, Louis. You pronounce his name?
Louis Sayhoyos.
Sayhoyos. Right. We had just seen a screening of Racing Extinction, which is an essential film to watch, in my opinion. And
not exactly uplifting, but a good reality check about where we are, Racing Extinction.
Exactly. Yes. Yes.
And I feel like we're all on that race on some capacity.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And I had just finished a film, Racing with Copepods, yep, which are these little one-eyed, little tiny animal plankton with crazy little legs that you can't see with your naked eye, and you got really excited about these copepods.
Well, I got excited about it. I mean, plankton featured in the film Racing Extinction, you know, zooplankton and phytoplankton as, you know, some of the most important creatures, you know, on our planet as part of what, you know, creates oxygen that helps us all to breathe and, you know, that are part of the base of the marine food web. So coming out of that film and feeling so energized and so, I mean, it was sad and depressing, but feeling just more energized than ever to be part of protecting what's still here and also celebrating what's still here. And then to have met you, Barbara, who had just finished making this film about these tiny, teeny, tiny little creatures that are so very important. And, you know, that you had also involved Sylvia Earle. She's part of that film that you created, Racing with Copepods. Yeah. Because the basis of my clothing is pattern design based on native plants and animals, I immediately wanted to create a copepod pattern and see you wearing it. So it was one of those things that, and then that's happened since then, which is pretty amazing.
And what's really wild about that story is that you were beginning to inspire me, because here I made this film. I'd never made a film before. It was kind of a crazy, wild story in of itself. But then you come along, you get excited about copepods. And then you don't just draw copepods, which you could certainly do, but you go into this whole historic look at the artistry of copepods with a German designer from the 1920s, 1930s. Do I have that right?
Well, yes. Ernst Haeckel was early 19th century evolutionary biologist from Germany, who anyone who's involved in scientific illustration is familiar with his book Art Forms of Nature. So while I like to create my own pattern designs for the clothing that I create from typically original photographs, I had a really hard time. You did connect me with a number of scientists who offered photographs for use in creating a copepod pattern.
International scientists. International who were very science. Excited about your work.
Yes, exactly. And they were wonderful in sharing some very beautiful images with me. That said, I still had a very hard time making a copepod look as beautiful as Ernst Haeckel did. And because his images, you know, are now in the public domain, I was able to actually create a pattern using some of his historic illustrations. And I'm just really happy with how it turned out. And just love, you know, celebrating these very important, very beautiful little organisms. And so that was a beautiful coming together of both of our work and celebrating nature. And hope there's more of that to come.
And then that introduced me to your work and your vision for a new business that you've created on fashion. Why is this important to you, and why should it be important to anyone? What are you excited about? How does this model excite you?
Well, Anima evolved very naturally for me. I have always been interested in the patterns of the natural world and have been a photographer for a number of years, and very grateful to have had parents growing up, my mom and my dad, who taught my brother and I to look very closely and, you know, to just be full of wonder, you know, for the beauty of the natural world. My brother is an evolutionary biologist, and I'm more, you know, an artist and designer, but we both have very similar, I think, perspective on the world more than we realize. Actually, Anima began after my mom passed away. She passed away about 2 years ago, and I launched Anima last August of 2016, and in a way, it's part of my way of honoring that gift that she gave to me, that, you know, just infinite source of wonder and joy, just, you know, found in the act of loving observation of the natural world. And so it was I created Anima as a way to hopefully impart, you know, the same means of joy, just through, you know, looking more closely at, you know, even the most common wildlife or the plants that you see every day. Just, you know, there's so much joy I get out of looking at the patterns of, you know, the back of a western fence lizard, or, you know, the color blue of a scrub jay that, you know, is like no other than maybe the sky, you know, and just those simple things that bring so much joy. And I think I found so much solace in seeing the beauty of the natural world and just moments of, you know, observation and being in nature. I think in part because my mom was such a lover of nature, and I never knew how important that would be until I always, you know, was appreciative of it, but it wasn't until after she passed that I realized what a legacy it was, just to have gained that. It's a way of seeing, I think. And so what I want to share with people is clothing that is a celebration of life. I'm basically wanting to take this wonder that I feel for the natural world and infuse it into the fabric of everyday life as a way of, you know, celebrating the beauty and diversity. And it, you know, it's a source of lifelong joy and inspiration, and just want people to look more closely. And I think that there's so much negative focus on, you know, the stories of extinction, which it's important to know the facts. But I think I'm very energized to just be a part of simply celebrating what's here and what's still here, and whether the patterns that I create are focused on endangered species like the California condor, or the most common species, like I said, including, you know, plankton.
And part of the energy to bring recognition to this plight that we're all facing is by opening up conversation about it. Mm-hmm. And one of the ways of that is people coming together and talk, just like how you and I met. It was after a film screening. We were both concerned. We started talking, and then we started to collaborate. And from what I was in an event with Jamie Redford, Robert Redford's son, just the other day at a global climate event. And what they were saying is people need to get together in order to talk, in order to change, because we inspire one another. Mm-hmm. And what better way than arriving at a cocktail party or wherever it might be, arriving with a scrub jay pattern on a dress to talk about coral or scrub jays or whatever it is that the pattern is. So your clothing is actually creating conversation.
I hope so. Yeah, I think it is. I think I was wearing a scrub jay dress made of a pattern that I designed from the tail feathers of a scrub jay. no scrub jays were harmed in the creating pattern, for the record. And I just got so many, I mean, maybe it was because we were in Mill Valley and, you know, there's a lot of very nature-loving, eco-conscious people in this hot spot on planet Earth. But I got so many comments and compliments and people just, you know, their eyes open wide and they were just excited to see what they were seeing. And, oh, I want to get one for my daughter. And so, yeah, it is a conversation
so
starter.
You actually don't have to wear dead feathers in order to
exactly or
to
fur.
Show the beauty of the animal or the patterns or the colors of,
right.
of life, of what we cherish as life.
Right. Yes. So I use a digital textile printing process, which the technology is just incredible these days. I think in the last 5 years, it's improved so much that you get a photographic quality of printing on a variety of different materials. And I like to use organic cotton or silk or, you know, other sustainably created fabrics and, you know, ideally grown and milled in the USA.
Made in the USA.
And made nice. In the USA. So yeah, made locally here in California.
Really? And why do you feel that that's important?
Oh, it seems like a no-brainer these days, but it's easier said
Agreed.
Than done. It's
Agreed.
Easier said than done, especially in the clothing industry. And we are like just on the tip of the iceberg, I think, in a major revolution in that industry. I think people are really starting to wake up to the social and environmental equality issues and degradation, you know, issues that are so rooted in that industry. And so I want to be a part of that revolution. I mean, we, you know, food is still undergoing a revolution, you know, sort of the move towards organics and sustainable agriculture, and that's ongoing. But this is another one. It's a big one. It's a big part of our daily life. And I think people are going to start looking more closely at where their clothing comes from and how it's made and what it's made of. And plastics are a big part of that as well, you know, so it's, yeah.
Yeah, it's one of my neighbors is a seamstress, and she has 3 kids, so it's not easy working from home, but she's been trying to, and mm-hmm. she says, you know, this is, we all have the capability of creating amazing things.
Mm-hmm.
We've gotten just so big, and we, yet if you can tap into your own passions like you are, mm-hmm. You can really create something small into something bigger. And,
mm-hmm.
and but what's interesting about your approach to this is it's not just about sustaining yourself. You're looking to help. Your model is looking to sustain other organizations who are also doing good work, like Mission Blue.
Yes, yeah. I mean, that also seems like a no-brainer to me, but...
But it's not.
Also easier said than done.
Been.
And, you know, I'm definitely inspired by my many other businesses who have some kind of giving back built into their model. So, yeah, I'm aiming to donate 1% of profits to Mission Blue. And, you know, I think with special limited edition prints, I'd like to aid other local and global conservation organizations and use the patterns that I create or special garments that I create to help conservation missions, both locally and globally. And that's kind of the dream. And Mission Blue is, I think they're just doing incredible work. They're really working so quickly to help establish these marine protected areas. And it's, you know, we have a lot of catching up to do, you know, with marine protection. So I just think that's one of those organizations that was easy for me to choose as, you know, as the main target and partner. So
yeah, and it probably even bigger conversation here in California as the threat of offshore drilling begins to emerge. It's
mm-hmm.
an even more important time to recognize the beauty that we have, that we have fought for.
Yes,
you know,
yes.
You have these incredible kelp designs too.
I love kelp. Yes.
Sticky, slimy kelp. You love kelp. Why do you love kelp?
Oh my gosh. Kelp was actually one. That was the first pattern that I made. I actually, when I moved, I only moved to California 5 years ago. So Anima is also my way of learning the richness of life and biodiversity that is present here on the Central Coast, both terrestrial ecology and marine ecology. But yeah, I moved here and I just could not believe how beautiful giant kelp. I mean, just in so many different perspectives. I feel like I could spend the rest of my life making kelp patterns of giant kelp, and there's just so many ways to portray it. I mean, whether you're looking at the close-up ribbed pattern of the fronds, or you know, the whole organism itself. You know, that's this towering tree-like, you know, algae rising up from the forest floor that is just majestic and unbelievably beautiful when you spend time underwater and are able to watch it move and sway in the tides and currents. And it has a very giving form. And, you know, then I've made a pattern recently with the scimitar blade, so the growth tip of the kelp that has a beautiful curvilinear form. And so, yeah, I actually, my nephew, Axel, was born, and I wanted to make him a handmade gift, which I always like to do. And so I actually picked up a kelp frond from Carmel Beach, California, and I printed directly from the frond itself onto a onesie. So that was the original pattern that I designed from kelp was, you know, kind of a direct print. And I think I've come a long way since then. That was a cute thing. But I think there's just endless fun to be had with kelp, and it is the basis of you know, the marine ecology offshore here in Monterey Bay National Marine Sanctuary, and something to be celebrated. And
And it really sustains so much life. I mean, so much. I was diving. Yes. I got certified down in Monterey myself, Patty. Actually, with Sylvia Earle's family. It was a big, big day for me. Mm-hmm. And my daughter as well, 13-year-old daughter. And when we were swimming along the giant kelp, just the immense amount of life. I mean, from fish to shell life that actually live on the fronds themselves. Yeah. It's a whole life center. Yes. And you also help share some of that information and the stories about the ecology itself on your website, which I think is, so you're not only celebrating the beauty of it, but you're also helping to educate people about the different life forms that you're
crafting. I'm hoping to educate people and promote a little bit more eco-literacy, but in a very fun way, a very fun and lighthearted way, because, you know, you get bored maybe after a couple of, you know, hours in a natural history museum and it's just too much information. But yeah, I think it's important to convey the stories and to learn from them. We all learn from animals. I learned so much in meditating on each species that I focus on, and it changes my perspective on them forever. You know, just the little things that you learn about a given animal when you really dive deep. Like, you know, Dungeness crabs molt their carapace like 6 times a year, the first 2 years of their life. And wow, like, what do we have to learn from that? That's just a beautiful, metaphor, I think, for us. And just, you know, so I'm interested in telling those stories that we can relate to, you know, across species. And I really have fun doing that. But it's important to me to convey it in a fun and energizing way versus, you know, I bring the science in, but I'm trying to bring, you know, the beauty and the wonder and the, oh my God, are you kidding me? Like, they do that, like, into it, because, yeah.
It's funny you say that. I was just thinking back to my docent days at California Academy Science in San Francisco, and learning about the tide pools. And as an adult, I was learning about species that I had never heard of that are, I mean, butterflies of the sea. What are they called? These like little slugs. They're little tiny
nudibranchs.
They're butterflies of the sea. They're little like slugs, but they come in all these crazy wild colors and reds and yellows, and they're absolutely gorgeous. Mm-hmm. And people have spent their lifetime studying these, and it's like, why didn't I ever? I felt kind of cheated. I'm going to say it. I felt cheated of my education. It's like, what have I been learning all my life? What did I learn in school? What are these incredible creatures that are part of the California coast that I know nothing about?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And there's always more. And we're still discovering new species too. I mean, there's a focus on extinction, but that said, we're still discovering new species as well. And, you know, it's really trying to focus on the positive and celebrate what's here right now.
And that just opens up more doors of discovery and maybe advocacy of, like, we need to protect what we don't even know, right?
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Exciting. Exciting. So how has it been for you as a new business? I mean, has it been a struggle getting a new business going with this model, or has been a labor of love? I'm sure it has been, because I'm seeing you smile and glow right now. Whenever you talk about this project, I see a lot of happiness come from you.
It became a force of nature, so I don't really have a choice. I mean, I feel like it chose me in a way. I just can't stop making patterns, and I will probably do it for the rest of my life, whether or not, you know, on whatever level it's shared. And I would love, it's natural for me to because I get so much enjoyment out of it, and I wasn't sure when I began if other people would get enjoyment out of it, but now that I know that others get equally as excited as I do, I would really love to share it with as many people as I can. So it hasn't been, I mean it's been easy in the sense that it's, you know, it's flowing and it's, you know, taken on a life of its own, and I'm very passionate about it. And I think it's easy also in the sense that it's more than ever, we have so many resources at our fingertips, literally, to, you know, learn how to start a business and, you know, and do so, with technology and apps and, you know, ease of making websites and everything like that. So, that's been great. And I love that, we're starting to see so many more creative individuals take what might be just a hobby that they do on a small scale and grow it into something that's, you know, more widely shared because it is so easy. But, you know, that said, it's, you know, it's I would say I'm still growing and learning along the way. And but that's part of the excitement for me too, because I, you know, I have training in fine arts. I was a fine art photographer for many years and then got a master's in landscape architecture and have been doing that for the last decade of my life. And so I never took a business class in my life, but there are lots of resources out there. You just have to find them. And I've had help in my community and you know, have sought lots of other resources. But it's, yeah. It's a learning curve, but it's one that I'm, you know, excited to be on. So
I had a guest on the show, Jonna Marino, and also Lyle Harris, they're both artists, either book of arts or authors. And one of the things that we were talking about is collaboration, mm-hmm. and how important collaboration is, especially among artists, and how artists feed each other, mm-hmm. too. It's not necessarily an act of competition as right. it is. Like you do something and then I get excited and I share something or you share something and we both grow and build together. Mm-hmm. And I'm thinking, just sitting here with you right now, it's like, you know, that's kind of what we were doing. And now you've done mm-hmm. this with many other people on mm-hmm. a much higher level. But I was thinking, God, the very fact that you're here with me today mm-hmm. is because you reached out that one day and we talked Copepods mm-hmm. and how that just keeps growing and growing and growing. Mm-hmm. And then that was a lead in to meet scientists and I think it was Dr. Richard Kirby in yes. London, right? Yes. Who's yep. doing amazing work with plankton. Mm-hmm. And so I wonder if you have any thoughts about that, about collaboration in this field that you're working in and how that's offered you growth.
Oh, yeah. I think that's just the tip of the iceberg as well. I look forward to many more collaborations, and I'm very open to where this will take me. I'd love to collaborate with someone who knows more about clothing design than I do. I mean, I design the clothing and the patterns, but I haven't specialized in that for a very long time. I'd love to work with somebody who designs couture gowns and, you know, create some beautiful gowns that might, you know, appear on the red carpet someday or something like that. You know, I just think there's so many possibilities. I would really love to collaborate more with multiple conservation organizations. This year, again, I've donated one of my bird feather patterns, which appears on a silk scarf, to the Ventana Wildlife Society to mm. support that conservation organization that is, they're basically leading condor recovery for the Big Sur population of California condors. And so I donated a silk scarf to auction last year at their annual Feathers in Flight fundraiser. And this year they asked me again, you know, for an auction item. But this year this is a little plug here, but they're having Tim Huntington, a local photographer down in our community, has a new film about California condors. And there'll be a series of screenings, three screenings this year, that will be the Ventana's fundraiser. So, and I think they'll be selling, they purchased a number of the condor scarves that I created last year at the event. So it's a pattern made with California condor feather, red-shouldered hawk, and brown pelican. And so it's fun. I mean, that's just, I'm really glad that that's continuing to grow, that we're, you know, continuing to build a relationship and foster collaboration. So yeah, we'll see where it all goes.
Oh, that's really beautiful. And it's, again, just a moment to think about that these are patterns. These are not the actual feathers. These are not the it's not the actual fur, but it's mm-hmm. a representation, mm-hmm. Which really, for me, that would make me so much better, feel much better about wearing, yeah. because it's still in the same spirit, isn't it?
It is, yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's not a new concept. It's the oldest concept there is, probably, is, you know, the animal print or the, you know, plant and animal patterns, you know, on objects of everyday life. It's right. It's ancient. So I'm just using a new technology that is really exciting to me.
I and for me too.
Yeah.
So thanks so much for sharing that.
Mm-hmm.
You were sharing before the show a really powerful story. And we've been talking about life and the beauty of life and the awe of life, of nature and mm-hmm. wildlife. You were sharing a story about your mother.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm hoping you might share that story with everyone here, because it was about death.
Mm-hmm.
But there was such a light within that death that you mm-hmm. shared that was really beautiful.
I would love to.
Your mother sounds like a wonderful human being.
She's a wonderful, yeah, she was a wonderful woman. And her name's Shauna. And yeah, I mentioned that Anima started as a way to celebrate, you know, sort of her legacy of love for nature that I wanted to share more widely. Also, I'd like to, I'm in the process of taking Anima in a new direction. Or I guess it's an extension. It's, you know, I will still offer the same. Right now I offer women's clothing and silk scarves and cashmere wraps and other accessories. But I'd like to also have a focus on creating custom garments with a focus on feather patterns to be able to offer people whatever you might want to call it, a prayer shawl. There are lots of terms, a pall that you might cover a coffin with, for example. But basically, I'd like to create transitional objects that can help people through the death of their loved ones. And this comes from a personal experience that was very spontaneous and didn't involve something that I created, but it was the experience of having given my mother a scarf for Christmas, you know, a few years before she passed. And when she was in the ICU, I just at one point brought the scarf with me to the hospital and, you know, draped it around her neck. She wanted to pretty herself up a little bit and, you know, brought some, you know, some color into, you know, sort of the hospital gown getup, and and that was very, very welcome. And then when my mom, you know, so we brought her home from the ICU, and we were very lucky to be able to do that. And we were very lucky to, you know, my father and I were at her side when she passed peacefully in her home on a very cold winter's night in Chicago in February 2 years ago. And so after she, you know, after she took her last breath and closed her eyes, I placed the same scarf over her chest, and she, you know, remained there the rest of the night. And, when we had her funeral, I wore the scarf to the funeral, and now, you know, it's hanging on my wall at home, and I can take it down and I can touch it and feel it and hold it close, and it's soft and it's beautiful and it's a chosen object. There are a lot of, you know, reminders that you come across that sort of can, you know, rip your heart open at any given time. And it's, you know, you never know sometimes, you know, where they're going to come at you from. And that's part of the process of grieving, and it's natural. But I just really like the concept of having sort of a chosen object like this that can be used in multiple different ways. And that's not a new concept either. In many cultures, I'm just in the process of educating myself now, how different cultures around the world have, you know, used a simple textile or cloth in the, you know, rituals of death and mourning. And so it's just something that I would like to elaborate on, and particularly with feathers. And, you know, there's a very powerful, beautiful, natural metaphor between death and flight. And just it seems like a natural progression for me, and I'm really, really, really excited to build my feather inventory, and I'd love to create custom patterns, you know, for people, for their, you know, for the loved ones in their life. And I think it's also an important it's another revolution, I would say. I think we're, you know, collectively beginning to have a better relationship with death. And, you know, it's pretty normal for me to talk, like, anyone, I have a lot of friends who've lost a parent or lost a loved one, and it's a pretty normal thing to talk about. I think if you haven't experienced it, it's not. But you know, once it is, it's normal and it's healthy. So I'd like to be part of, you know, opening that up. I think only good things can come from that.
Yeah, it's I'm glad you said that. It is a revolution, and it's a really healthy revolution, because mm-hmm. Death has been such a taboo subject. It's mm-hmm. like one of the last remaining taboo subjects. I was producing a show with Dr. Dawn Gross on KLW last October, mm-hmm. and she was trying to become more the spokesperson and open people up to talk about the subject. Mm-hmm. Death cafes have emerged, people talking about loved ones just as you are, because by doing so, you bring life to the things that matter most. And mm-hmm. that's actually a line from Dr. Dawn Gross. Mm. It's when, like your mother, I'm just seeing you smile again, and you're, the things that you learned and the ways that she inspired you, those mm-hmm. are the lasting things, aren't they? Reminding Truly. Us what's important in life.
Yes.
And we all need to be reminded of that right now, isn't yeah. it? I mean, don't we?
Oh, yeah.
Life can get so muddled. I mean, my goodness, just driving in traffic, you kind of forget.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. There's so many distractions. But then when you come down to it, what are the important things?
Yeah.
And all those things that are excessive and don't have meaning lose their meaning
yes.
when you're focused on the end of something,
yeah.
as you remember. Mm-hmm. And what better way than having a garment or something, which is, yeah, it's really the idea of sacredness.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And an object that's sacred,
yeah.
that's not a throwaway, which our
right.
culture has suffered from.
Exactly. It's not just something to be consumed once.
And it has a story to it, too, which, I'm thinking here, your clothing, there's story pieces. Mm-hmm. There are ways of getting people to share stories about the beauty and awe of life
mm-hmm.
or a loved one. And all of those shared stories cultivate the real, don't they?
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah. Yes. It has to be based in story. That's why I try to keep the education part around a story. And I don't make a pattern unless I've had a personal experience with the animal, you know, and they all come from original photographs that I take of the animals that I've, except for the copepod. I'm sure I've swallowed a few of them at some point, but
yeah,
I don't want to think about it, actually.
Yeah. Yes, if you're a surfer, you have swallowed many copepods
yes. without
knowing it. But
it's all about the story.
It's all about the story, and that's mm-hmm. where the heart comes in, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's what moves you
yeah.
that gets you into action.
Yes.
Right,
yeah.
Right. Yeah. Well, you know, it's funny because another person that I've gotten to know is a guy named Ned Buskirk. And I was actually going to plug him because he's the perfect person to plug. He's a San Francisco resident who's created these You're Going to Die events where people tell stories about death. But it's done in such a beautiful, healthy, you're laughing, you're crying, you're feeling again. And it's, mm-hmm. I mean, isn't that what connects us as humans?
Mm-hmm.
It's not information. I mean, how much information can you know? And who, at the end of the day, what is it that you feel?
Yeah.
Right?
Yep.
Do we forget that? I think we do. You're okay. Shaking your head, yes.
Big time.
Big time, yeah. Yeah, we love, we have deal with hate, don't we? But it's human. I mean, it's mm-hmm. unfortunately. But the wonder and awe, I wonder if that is what we have been forgetting, because that's also a profound feeling, too.
Mm-hmm. mm-hmm.
And opens you up to the unknown and the mysteries of life.
Yes, yes. Well, that reminds me of, I won't be quoting this exactly, but there was, I think, an interview with an ornithologist from Cornell in the film Racing Extinction, to bring it back to Racing Extinction.
Okay.
And I believe it was a Cornell ornithologist, and he said something to the effect that there's a symphony all around us and nobody is listening. As in, you know, and to someone who studies birds, it's probably, you know, you're hyper aware of what you're hearing around you all the time, even in the most urban environment. There's bird song, you know, not always all around you, but it's there. And so it's a call, and that's what I'm trying to do is, you know, provide another call to open your eyes and open your ears and notice it. Just notice it. And just the act of noticing something is an act of, that's where a conservation, I think, can begin, you know, it's just in the act of noticing it. So that's
and loving it. That's another formula, mm-hmm. Part of the formula from what I understand. And this goes to the idea that if you love something, you do whatever you can to protect it, whether mm-hmm. it's your, you know, children or a landscape or mm-hmm. your backyard. I mean, mm-hmm. why is it that people don't want things in their backyard? It's because they love their backyard. They've nurtured it. It's, you know, making a joke of that. But,
mm-hmm.
You know, and I think actually that was what Obama was trying to do with our coast, actually. He could have signed off the sanctuaries very easily with a pen.
Yeah.
But instead, he waited to let people come to meetings, advocate, feel like they are taking charge of their own space, because he had that vision that if you fight for something and you take a stand for it, if it ever becomes threatened, you're there for it.
Yeah.
You know, which all goes back to the local as well, too.
Yeah.
Loving your local space, loving, you know, that sense of love and protection. It's so exciting. And you're bringing that love to that, and the recognizing what we have locally.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
To that local conversation and the local language. You in actually, what is the quote that you have on your website? I have to say this: to be native to a place, we must learn to speak its language. And that's by Robin Wall Kimmerer.
Yes, Robin Wall Kimmerer. She's an excellent author and scientist. She's a bryologist or bryologist. I'm not sure how you pronounce that, but she studies moss and lichen, which says a lot, you know, as somebody who has their eyes open to, you know, these minute worlds that most people don't even see. And so she has Native American heritage as well. And so she, you know, she speaks about the languages that are the other languages. I won't be able to do her poetics justice, but that are all around us. You know, there are visual languages. Doing pattern design, see that as a visual language, and it's one that you know, has evolved over billions of years, and it's an amazing language. And once you tune into it and see it in that way, it's hard not to see it and be captivated by it, and to want to become more fluent in it, in whatever that means. And I don't know what that means, but it's, you know, just devoting yourself to looking at something so closely that you can almost feel the rhythm in, you know, the speckles on the back of a Dungeness crab, or, you know, the stripes of a hawk feather that evolved with light and shadow, and, you know, in the forest. And it's just something that you could spend the rest of your life learning and enjoying. And that's what I want to promote.
Yeah. Well, you're doing a great job. Mm-hmm. Wow, what your work is so inspiring to me. As a nature educator, for about 4 years, I used to take kids out into the forest for 3-4 hours a week. On one day, we would just go out there with our lunches, and at about 8, they're all girls, and that was their education, their nature education. But they weren't the ones getting educated. It was me getting educated. I was getting re-educated.
Right.
You know, Mark Twain actually has this great quote that, you know, education is actually about forgetting what you learned and learning again. And that's actually what I felt, because I was going through the forest with their eyes versus how I was taught to go through the forest, maybe how I learned, or how I, you know, came to it, where it's, you know, you start here and you go there and you want to reach that point.
Right.
But it's the journey that counts. And it's about opening your eyes as you're moving through that space.
Yeah.
And discovering rather than going for that goal.
Right.
Which is opening up your awareness, you know, and there is nothing like going through a forest with 8-year-old. Well, these were girls, boys could be the same, but my experience was with the girls, because they were finding, we sat down on a rock, I kid you not, for an entire hour. There was a little tiny hole in the rock. Yeah. And there was an ant with a big crumb in his hand who was trying to wiggle his butt down into that hole and take that bread of, that crumb with him. And we were fascinated for, maybe it wasn't an hour, okay, half an hour. But it was such a small, tiny little thing that would completely escape anyone else's sight.
Yep.
But it was fascinating. And we were just laughing at this, laughing in you know, support of this ant, but just the wonder of this little tiny creature that was trying to do something so big in his little life.
Right.
And I just, you know, and isn't that what you're doing with, that's my phone, I'm going to turn that off, with your work, is just bringing back what we forget to see back into
the
present.
Yes, it's exactly, I couldn't have put it better. I think as adults, well, as children or adults at any age of our life, we're constantly relearning how to do the basic things. Like even, you know, yoga and meditation teach us we relearn through some of these practices how to move our bodies and how to breathe, and something as fundamental as, you know, seeing. I think it's just one of those things that were also, you know, were better for opening ourselves to relearning or to, you know, revisiting what we think we know about how we see or.
So that sounds like humility.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. And just, yeah, just openness. And it's, you know, I think you have to be open to your own intuition, you know. Intuition is a part of seeing as well. That's a whole other conversation probably. But, you know, we think with our brains and we feel with our hearts and we intuit with, you know, all of us. And there's just lots of ways of perceiving and being in the world. And so I think that's another big part of anima is wanting us to see and feel and experience the world with all of ourselves, you know, all parts of ourselves, all parts of our sensory and, you know, cognitive selves.
That's what makes us human. Mm-hmm. We have all these facilities.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. I think about what we, in the past, when we've talked about someone who's really smart, we talk about how much information they might have. Mm-hmm. And I'm wondering if that conversation is beginning to change today. Mm-hmm. If it's not so much about information as it is about being in tune mm-hmm. with what's more real. And feeling and being kind, mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm. can kindness be part of this formula? Yeah. I know I could use a little bit more kindness in this world.
Definitely. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Oh, I think in the our relationship to nature is a reflection of our relationship to ourselves and to each other as well. Mm. So if we, you know, can learn to be, and I think there's trauma in our past, you know, industrial revolution, that's all collective trauma. This is my opinion, but a lot of things happened really quickly. Extinction started happening really quickly, and, you know, environmental degradation and pollution started happening really quickly. And I think we probably have some collective guilt around that. And I think, you know, we're you know, right in this moment making great progress and trying to figure out how to live more sustainably. And I think that part of that process is, revisiting the past and revisiting that trauma. And I think when we can rise above our own guilt, we can begin to, like, feel a little bit more kindness towards ourselves. And that will, you know, in turn be reflected towards our relationship to the natural world. I'd like to hope. Anyway, it's all connected.
It is all connected. I don't think I could have said it better. That's, that collective guilt. Well, you know, mm-hmm. I have to tell you, do you know where the whole copepod idea came from?
Tell me.
My polywogs when I was a 10-year-old kid. So this isn't guilt, but this was trauma. Mm-hmm. I had mm-hmm. a runoff ditch where I used to go find polywogs. Mm-hmm. I had to jump a fence that said, do not enter, because it was the only wild place where I was growing up.
Yeah.
It was all groomed lawns and everything manicured, so there was no wild nature, and I think mm-hmm. I really loved that as a child.
Yeah.
I think there's something very important about that as a child, being able to explore and find things. And so I jumped this wire fence down to a runoff ditch where it was, you know, soil and plants and I would loved my polywogs and the little frogs. And this was where I would, you know, I'd have to sneak away and find it. But then they paved it with concrete. And I was probably about 13 or so. I looked down and it was trauma mm-hmm. because it was something that I loved so much.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You had a relationship with.
I had a relationship mm-hmm. with.
Yep.
You know, and then somehow the whole copepod thing, I didn't make that distinction or not distinction, the connection to that until after the film. Mm-hmm. And then I realized, oh my God, I just took back my polywogs.
Yeah.
And when
redemption.
Redemption. It was total redemption. I didn't save my ditch, but I'm going to save an ocean. Right? But that was actually, I think, that the fervent thing for me was like, oh my God, it's not just a little runoff ditch we're talking about. We're talking mm-hmm. about the planet now.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And one of the people that got me moving on that, again, it was a storyteller. It was Dennis DeLastrick, who did Sand Wars, talking about how concrete is just, in the story of sand, is really covering up so much of our landscape.
Mm-hmm.
And doing detriment to our oceans, and you know, risking these copepods and other beautiful wildlife that we have.
Yeah.
So yeah, the power of love.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So what? Where? So you have a couple of ideas and directions that you're doing so much. Let's just face that. And you took the time to come up here for this show, and so happy to hear all these things that you're sharing. What's your vision? Like, what are you hoping to accomplish? And that's kind of a hard question, because sometimes mm-hmm. you just don't know, and mm-hmm. it just starts to take you in a direction that you may not even know that you're going in, and then you are.
Sure. Yeah. Well, I'd like to just continue focusing on patterns of California. Right now, I'm focusing on kelp forest patterns, although I tend to always have diversions. You know, sometimes an animal will come into my life and I say, I have to do your pattern now. And but I'm hoping to, you know, create a number of collections in California, both aquatic and terrestrial patterns. And then I think in the future, I'd love to continue to expand different collections in different parts of the world. And, you know, I'm from the Great Lakes. I'd love to do a Great Lakes collection. And I'm spending some time in the South Pacific this fall. And, you know, there's lots of places I'd like to take it. But clearly, you know, there's infinite possibilities for creativity. But I love the pattern design. And I'm also trying to incorporate that into my other business, which is J Blue Design. This is growing out of my 10 years in landscape architecture. I'm taking my landscape architectural skill set into a focus on interpretive design. So while Anima, I think in a way I see it as sort of interpretive fashion, I'd like to do more interpretation in place in the landscape, and pattern design is, I see it playing a very big part in that as well. So I'd like to do some larger scale things in place with different technologies, and I'll just leave it at that for now. But
And one other point that I wanted to acknowledge is looking at your website. I mean, not only are you showcasing your beautiful, beautiful work and sharing the informational part of these animals, something a biologist might learn, or a layperson could learn from, to understand the importance of these animals, but the models, the people that you're using.
Yeah, including you.
Okay. I'm not saying I'm a model, but I got to wear your beautiful things to get my picture taken. But
yes,
what I love about it, and I'm not a professional by any means. Mm-hmm. In fact, I feel very uncomfortable in front of the camera, but thank you. You made me feel very comfortable.
Thank you.
You made it fun.
Good.
It's like, I'm not here for me. I'm here for the copepod. but you're, I mean, what I see you're doing is you're reshaping the identity of beauty, and what it's not just about physical, but it's about what it is that you're doing, which is actually a concept Ned Buskirk is trying to also establish. It's not just how you look, or it's about also what you do, which helps create a sense of beauty.
Mm. Yeah, so I'm just really enjoying being able to feature. Right now it's women, because I'm so far just making women's clothing, but I'd like to make men's clothing as well. But I just love inviting people to, if they're willing, to model a pattern. And a lot of the models who aren't models professionally, actually one of them is a model professionally, as well as an actress and singer and lots of other things. But I love to invite people to model the patterns, especially, you know, people who are involved in conservation, because it's, you know, I don't feel, I mean, that like all you hear about these days is, you know, branding and identity. And I mean, I'm really just trying to be real. And for me, that's about real people. And so I don't know, I want to have real people as part of the process, and whether it's, you know, modeling for a photo shoot or in a fashion show. And that's just really important to me. And yeah, thinking about our aesthetic of beauty, I mean, it's the whole package. It's got to be the whole package. So I'm trying to highlight, you know, on the website, I try to give a bio of the women that I, you know, that are give themselves so, you know, so graciously to modeling the clothing, and to share a little bit about, you know, the important work that they're doing. So
and it's
that's
important.
A pleasure.
It is important. It's, you know, I'm doing a lot of work with bringing light to Jimmy Carter's administration And one of his great speeches, Crisis of Confidence, is we're beginning to value more what people have instead of what they do by judging people by what they have.
Yes.
Instead of what it is that they do. And there was a switch right about that time culturally. And so what you're speaking to is really what he was speaking to. Mm-hmm. It's like, can we start reshaping that identity and mm-hmm. valuing people?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And really, the people who are trying to dig us out of the trench here are our heroes. It's a new story for our country, really.
Yeah.
It's a healthy reminder.
Thank you. Yeah.
Jessica Nusi, thank you so much for joining us on the show. What is the website for your work?
It's www.animacalifornia.com. That's A-N-I-M-A, California.com.
And is there information on there, not just for your products, but for other events that might be coming up, other ways to reach you as well?
Yes. And there's contact information there as well. I'm on Instagram and Facebook too.
Thank you so much for joining us here on Take Back. The universe loves to laugh. 102.3 FM or worldwideradio.dominican.edu. A few reminders here. We have a show coming up next week on July 25th, same time, 12 to 1 o'clock with Tamara Peters. And she's going to talk carbon and our responsibility to carbon on this planet. Her organization, Resilient Neighborhoods, is taking the lead on this effort. And it's up to us to start losing some pounds. She's been standing for the earth, and we look forward to talking to her next week. Also, a couple of plugs here. Ned Buskirk, who I've been talking about through this program, he's got a great event coming up on Friday, August 11th, at the Great American Music Hall, and it's called You're Alive. It's about music and getting us excited about this great journey that we're all on, and you can learn more about that event at www.nedbuskirk.com. I'll be there. Hope to see you then too. Also, Wednesday, August 2nd. That's Wednesday, August 2nd at Community Media Center of Marin. I'll be giving a presentation about the wisdom of former President Jimmy Carter and his energy and environmental stand in the late 1970s. It's called There's a film I'll be showing called The Road Not Taken. So please join us then. You can find more on my website at barbaramcveigh.com. And thanks so much for joining us here on Take Back. A big thank you to Stuart Horn, our executive director here at Penguin Radio. And thank you again, Jessica, for joining us. And again, Jessica, your website is?
www.animacalifornia.com.
Great. Thank you so much for coming.